Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is the podcast with the unpopular opinion that progressive centre-left politics has a lot to offer the modern world. This May saw the trial of voter ID systems in certain areas for the local elections. The scheme was controversial from inception, so why did the government press ahead with it? I'm Progress Deputy Editor Connor Pope, and I'm joined by Alison McGovern, Hannah Shaw, and today's guest, Darren Hughes, Chief Executive of the Electoral Reform Society. The democratic fallout of 2016's EU referendum is enormous, and while pressure may be building for a people's vote on the final deal, we still have a lot of questions about the way that the last one was carried out. So in terms of Facebook algorithms and Russian bots, what kind of things are we learning at the moment, Alison?
Well, last week we had the Electoral Commission's report on the activities of Facebook, and Facebook actually got quite a large fine. I think I'm right in saying it's £500,000. Which is no small fry. I mean, obviously, to a global multinational like Facebook, I'm sure they can afford it. You know, I don't think they're going to be like doing a whip round in the office. But that's not really the point. The point is, firstly, that's the biggest fine I think the Electoral Commission has the ability to levy. So they might have given a bigger fine if they could have. The second point is, it's actually what it says about Facebook's activities. And I think that we have seen Facebook acting to be involved in elections for some time now. You know, not to blame Facebook or any other media organization for this, but the legislation seems to be out of date as far as I can see. I think we probably urgently need Parliament to have a look at it. But as relates to Brexit, all the time we seem to be learning quite a lot more about what actually happened in the referendum. I feel like, you know, nobody wants to be undemocratic about it and say that, you know, that it wasn't a fair result. But the more and more I personally learn about what happened in that referendum, the more uncertain I feel about that position.
Darren, what's your view on these kind of things? Do you get a sense that these revelations are kind of eroding people's trust in the way that we carry out elections in this country?
I think there's a very real risk of that. And I think this highlights why it's important to have good regulation about activity, because we overall think that voting is a very positive, exciting, democratic thing to do. So you've got to protect that. And I think wherever there is actions that undermine these things, you've got to look at the rule book again. Most of the rules of the game were written around the year 2000, and we're in a vastly different world from then. So the rules really aren't fit for purpose now. And I think
they're nearly 20 years out of date, basically, is what we're saying.
That's right. And you think of it, I think one of the interesting things is that campaigning used to be about stopping the other person spending more money than you, because the idea was, well, if they've got more money, they'll get more votes. And that will always be true to an extent. But some of the things that you can do now are extraordinarily cheap.
Yeah.
And so the issue is no longer saying, well, the money will sort it out. It's about activity and behaviour and ethics. And I think those things aren't caught in the current law and need to be, which is why we've got the Information Commissioner doing all this work, the Electoral Commission, individual whistleblowers. There's a lot of people who I think feel uneasy. And the best way to resolve that, rather than cast blame to one side or the other, is just to make sure the rules are up to date and then rigorously enforce them.
So has there not been any kind of updates to these rules in the past 18 years?
Some, but...
Because if we look at Facebook, for instance, that was what invented around 2005?
Yeah, but the bedrock is PPERA, Political Parties and Electoral
Referendums
Act. And yeah, it was designed for a different era. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, in this country, we have long, you know, heavily regulated and for the most part outlawed political broadcasting on television. So you can't buy advertising as people do in the US. But the fact is, most people are getting their media through completely different means now. So I think that Parliament's got to look at it.
Even the state-funded the political party broadcasts that go on the television, most people who watch those now watch them online.
Wow.
So right. even the original platform that was provided is no longer reaching the number of people. Now, you could say this is a good thing or a bad thing, and there's pretty obvious examples of bad behaviour, but that just means bringing the laws up to date. And I think the fact that the fine was the maximum, that tells you a huge amount about how concerned they were, because normally you set fines in a range, and the highest number is the maximum is to try and scare people off. But when a case is brought, it's normally a lot lower than that, mitigating factors, etc. But here they just went for the jugular and said, you're paying the whole lot. And I think that if Alison's right, if it was a higher possibility, they would have got more. And at the same time, Facebook are out advertising, telling us what they're doing about it all, and every possible publication going. So
I feel like I've seen those Facebook adverts like everywhere around me. Haven't you, Hannah, this weekend out and about?
I was watching the football and I saw one saying, Facebook's here for friends, which... And not for party political broadcasting, clearly, which is
yeah,
not true. I think what's really interesting about this, though, is I think it shines perhaps slightly ironically a light on how important the European Union or how important multinational organisations are to the protection of our data. I read somewhere that if Facebook had been taken to court under GDPR legislation, that after that they could have been fined up to 5% of their total turnover, which is significantly larger than the $500,000 that they were fined by the Electoral Commission. And I think so there's a touch of irony there to see that a big multinational organisation really should be the solution to limiting the power of some of these media companies to interfere in our political life.
It's amazing that people were in favour of Brexit. I can't imagine why.
But so what was it that Facebook did to have broken the rules? Was it just about the way that they kind of protected people's data? Or what was it that gave them this fine, essentially?
Well, I think that the latest example is that they weren't internally regulating the apps that they were allowing onto their own platform. So people were signing up for one thing, and I'm sure I'm not the only person who hasn't read every line of terms and conditions that before you press OK or agree. and embedded in that was the ability for them to look at lots of other things about your account, and then to package up that about the type of voter you were, and then feed that into some of these campaigns. So I think it's fine if people want to give away all their data. That's fine, but they've got to knowingly do it, and people have got to be honest about why they're collecting it. Because in these examples, the main purpose of the app was not exactly what they said it was by a long margin. And I think that's what's really kicked off the criticism.
Yeah, I think what's even more nefarious about this, I'm not sure if it's illegal or not, in that there was a setting a while ago that not only were you signing up to share all your own data, but also allowing apps to gain access to your friends' data.
Mm.
And of course, some of this is publicly available Facebook data, but they haven't consented to providing their personal data, where they live, their demographic information to some app, you know, a quiz about what kind of lemon are you, and you might be very happy to do that.
I think we probably need to take a short break just there. Apologies about the bell in the background there. But next we'll be talking about the impact of voter ID.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Voter ID was trialled in the UK in some places during this year's local elections. Now, Darren, can you explain what voter ID is? Because I do think a lot of people listening might confuse it with the kind of stuff that you do when you're out door knocking for the Labour Party.
Right. Well, it's slightly broader than Labour Party activity. and what it is for voters who are on the electoral register being required to produce some form of identification to prove they are who they say they are before their ballot paper is issued to them. And in May 2018, there were five areas basically in the south of England that trialled this approach, where people wouldn't be given a vote unless they complied with the rules. And there were different rules in each area, but the principle was the routine of simply arriving at your polling station and giving your name was replaced with some more onerous provisions for voters.
Does this mean it has to be photographic ID, or would a debit card do, or...
Well, this is what the trial was about, trying to work out different forms and what was the most useful. And so all of them had slightly different approaches, ranging from something photographic issued by the government through to some people were talking about a utility bill or a polling card that gets sent by the local authority. So there's been different types of them trialed, but the point was you had to take something in addition. You couldn't either, if you didn't have it or you'd forgotten it, you wouldn't be able to vote on that day.
Why was it trialled? Why did the government feel like they have to bring it in?
Well, it goes back to a report by Eric Pickles, the former local government secretary, who claimed that there was a lot of voter fraud taking place and the only way to fix it was to have voters arriving with identification. Now, that's not borne out by any facts or evidence or numbers, but this was what he proposed. And so these five trials took place and now the Electoral Commission is reviewing them to decide what to do next year. And it looks as though they'll try some more trials and polling during 2019.
Do you think that voter fraud is, you said there isn't much evidence, but like, does it take place? In Britain, is there much fraud?
Well, there's no evidence that there is. So on the one hand, you'd say, well, what kind of system where you just rock up and say your name and get given the voting paper? There must be lots and lots of fraud. But in actual fact, in the 45 million votes cast in 2017 at the general election, there were only 28 allegations where somebody said that was not the person they said they were. And that resulted in one person being convicted out of 45 million votes. So, you know, anything higher than zero is bad, but one, we don't think justifies putting the entire voting population through an exercise which might create barriers.
Do you think that's why the government want to do this? I mean, is it just cynical Labour MP of me to think, well, this is just about making life difficult for people who want to vote?
Well, we think that it's definitely a solution in search of a problem because it's not evidence-based at all. I mean, look, this is one of these things that sounds on first hearing to be no problem. You've got to go and pick up a parcel from the post office. They ask you for ID. The point being, if you forget your ID, the parcel's still there the next day. The election won't wait for you. But more than that, when you don't have tens of thousands of examples of people who go and vote in the afternoon only to find someone who's used their name in the morning, and then they quietly accept that. They don't rush to Twitter or Facebook or to their local media. They say, oh, fair enough, someone stole my vote, I'll leave it at that. this doesn't happen, right? So, and at the election, we had so many seats that were decided by such tiny margins, and there's no suggestion that fraud was the outcome. So you do have to look, I believe, sadly, you have to look at what the motivation really is for this, because with only 28 allegations and one conviction out of 45 million votes, it does seem over the top if the real motivation is to try and stop voter fraud.
So what kind of issues were raised in advance? Because I definitely heard that voter ID was a problem before the trials took place. What kind of concerns were raised with the government ahead of this?
Well, quite a number. So the Electoral Reform Society headed up a coalition of about 45 civil society organisations that were worried about this, and that ranged people who represent communities of people who represent geographic areas, people who represent age demographics, all these things where people could say, look, we advocate and speak on behalf of people who already face a lot of barriers accessing services and activities and voting, etc. Please don't put up more barriers for people. And the Cabinet Office just don't appear to have run an Equalities Act assessment over the top of this. There just doesn't seem to be a lot of thought about how difficult this could be. And even the five trial areas they chose weren't representative of the UK the British population. And so this is all, deeply worrying about the implementation. Also, you start to worry about people thinking, oh, I've forgotten it, so I won't bother showing up, I don't have it. Millions upon millions of people don't have a driver's license or passport. That's really hard for decision makers to understand because they always have both.
That's right. And, you don't need to be an equalities genius to work out who the people are who are less likely to have a passport and or a driving license. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it?
It's precisely.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a real problem, isn't it? I think what really struck me about the voter ID trial during the elections, obviously we had the Winrock scandal shortly afterwards, but the sort of intersection of that and the immigration detention issue and the hostile environment, and actually the fact that the people who are most likely not to have these papers are people who are already not likely to engage in the political process, at twice the rate of white British people. And if you put another barrier in their way, one, they find it so difficult to make it to the polls anyway, them actually trying to gain the form of ID that they would need. So whether it's applying for a passport or a driver's license or another form of ID that they would require could potentially put some of these people's immigration status at risk, and they don't know. And I think now, looking back on it after Windrush and after the whole hostile environment scandal, I can't see anyone rushing to say, oh, I really, really want to update my ID, even if they are in the country legally, because there's been such this aura of hostility and fear created around immigration status.
I think that's right. Also, it always strikes me how much when people who don't engage in the practice of elections ask me about this, how much you have to just tell people like it's really basic, ordinary things that stop people from voting, like that they work shifts, like that they have a caring responsibility, that like if you care for your nan and like for whatever reason you're busy with that during the period that you otherwise won't be able and available to vote, like unless you've signed up for a postal vote beforehand, like there's no way around it. You know, there's loads of just really practical stuff that stops people voting, which is why from the point of view of engaging in elections is why, you'd spend loads of time like making sure people are reminded of when the day is, that they're reminded that if they can't do it that day, they need a postal vote. And I think I agree with Darren, on the face of it, without further evidence of fraud, you have to suspect that this is just rocks in the road for the kind of people who might find it challenging to vote.
So I've never, every single time I've been out on the doors on polling day, which is quite a few times now, I've always had someone who said, oh, I was going to vote, but I don't know where my polling card is, which obviously you don't need your polling card to actually cast your vote. And so actually the level of knowledge around what barriers are in place for you to be able to cast your vote anyway is, is quite low. And if you start adding barriers on top of that, then there will be more people who are just put off. And unless someone is knocking on their door and going, actually, you can vote, then...
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, only two-thirds of people vote as it is now already. that should worry us. We've got millions of people missing from the electoral register because they were caught up in the change to individual electoral registration.
Yeah, that's another thing. They haven't been found.
So what you really want is to try and make all of this as easy as possible at every step, being able to register on the day. We can do this. This is all possible now. To be able to do. Why do we have such an antiquated system where we instruct somebody exactly where they have to go to vote, and if it doesn't suit them because, as Alison said, about caring responsibilities or they're called into work or something, then they can't get off to vote. And I think we've got a system that's developed through tradition to suit the people who kind of run politics because they want to find out the result on the night and they want this and they want that. But actually, we should be trying to make it easier for people to vote. And it just feels like this process was an attempt to put up barriers. So, for example, in the five areas that ran the trial, there hadn't been a single allegation, much less a conviction, not a single allegation in the 10 years before the vote. And yet in those areas, 340 people were denied a vote on the day. So in order to solve a mythical problem, 340 people couldn't vote in those five areas of England in the local elections. And you've got to step back and say, where is the great democratic joy in that? You know, that doesn't exist. Yeah. I think it's a big problem.
And in a local election, I mean, even more than we had some very close margins in 2017 general election, but in a local election, you might win or lose a seat by 10 or 20 votes. Either time, so it can be absolutely crucial, and people do, once they learn about voting, it does tend to be habitual. So if you stop someone from voting once, then you're breaking that habit, which is a really, really bad thing. I mean, I just know, as Connor says, how much, you know, we have to all the time correct misapprehensions about voting. You know, people think you might need ID already, or that you need your polling card, or that, you know, that you have to register each time or whatever. So the idea that we'd change those rules, to me, that would be a massive problem, because we would then have to spend a lot of time informing people about the change, which I can imagine people had to do in those areas.
Of course. And now we've got more people denied a vote than there ever was accused of doing fraud. So in terms of, you know, no one's sticking up for fraud. That's a terrible injustice, and impersonation is a criminal offence already. But now we've got a new category of injustice, which are those people who arrived to vote, wanted to do their democratic duty in elections, which a lot of voters see as fairly low order, you know, English local elections, you know, and yet they missed out.
So 340 is actually quite a high number, given that it was a local election, as you say, and you know, turnout has been rising in general elections for the past three elections on the run. Is there a sense, if it was rolled out nationwide, how big an effect that might have on turnout?
Well, I think it would. I just think instinctively you'll have people who, you know, who are totally entitled to be on the electoral register, but then they might have gone out for a run in the morning and called in to vote, don't have their correct ID with them, and then they're either not able to or not motivated to return later in the day. I think there's so many unintended consequences outside of all of the huge equalities issues we've mentioned. You know, there's another category of people whose lives just mean that if they'll go once, if they're not able to do it, they're lost for the day. And I just think that's got to have an effect. I mean, put it the other way, it's hard to see how it would boost turnout for somebody saying, oh, I've been waiting to vote with my passport all these years, I'll go down now to my polling station.
I remember the first time I was elected as a local councillor, and the election previously, the turnout had been 29%. So only a third of people voted, and we got it up to 41%. We were absolutely thrilled, you know, because like, in a local election where, you know, people kind of overall felt like they knew what the result was going to be. And also, it has to be said, in certain elections that aren't covered by the media as much, so by the television and the radio, its turnout can actually be really difficult, because a lot of people just forget that it's polling day. So, you know, I was really proud of that 41%. And it's absolutely devastating that it might get harder. So I guess my thought is, How can we stop this experiment from becoming more widespread?
Well, I think that there's two ways. One is that organisations like ours, who are non-partisan, when we work with lots of other non-partisan organisations, are raising these issues on behalf of the citizens that we represent. But at the political level, your colleague Kat Smith, as the Shadow Minister for Voter Engagement, has been exceptionally active on this, and has been giving the government minister, Chloe Smith, a really hard time on it. And the government are very dismissive of these concerns. The government are aggressively dismissive of it in a way that's really surprised me. And that's why I think there is the possibility of another agenda at play. There's a real sense of an Americanization here. These are the sort of tactics that have been used by the Republicans in the United States. And there's plenty of evidence coming out that does have a suppression effect, and it's an attack on the Voter Rights Act of the 1960s.
Hannah, what is your sense about how this might affect whether young people vote? Because obviously we had some rise in the number of young people voting at the last election. And the truth is that actually passports and stuff are quite expensive, and most people I know don't really carry them about And if you don't drive, then you're not going to have a driving license. Do you think, are there people that you know who you think would probably just kind of not bother if they had to carry this kind of stuff around?
I think that's certainly a good point. I think that, I mean, young people tend to be fairly disengaged anyway from our system, naturally. But I think there's been sort of a bit of a tide turn with the Labour Party picking up some younger members in recent years. And obviously, I think young people are starting to be engaged in the Brexit sort of negotiations a bit more via really active campaigning groups. But I think the broader point here that we haven't really touched on is one about political education. And it's interesting to talk about whether there's an agenda behind sort of having these voter ID laws and whether we're becoming more Americanized. But actually, what I've seen in my time, sort of I've been working with a charity supporting people in young people in South London to become engaged in politics. And they ran this great campaign called Legally Black last year, where they basically did film posters with themselves, and they're all young, I think, minority teenagers in the main roles. And they put themselves up into sort of, it was in bus stops all around South London to say, why is this unusual? Has this caught your eye? Why has this caught your eye? And that was one of the campaigns that came out of it. And what was really interesting is that the reason that this program exists is because these young people want to change the world that they live in, and they care about social issues and they care about political issues, but political education is so poor that they've got no idea how the House of Parliament work, how voting works, or even where they can go to get any kind of recourse to the things that they want to speak about. And I think that's a much broader problem. And from what I've seen, I don't want to get into conspiracy theories, but to me, it feels like this is an area within the national curriculum and within schools that politicians just don't seem to care as much about political education as perhaps they should.
Not all politicians, Hannah, not all politicians. Yeah, I mean, again, not an election that I've ever engaged in has gone by where somebody hasn't sidled up to me on a doorstep and said in a whispered voice, just explain to me how it is that you do vote. And not like who should I vote for? Like literally, what do I do on the paper? Mm. Like, that's fine, because like that is what we are actually there for, like, you know, to explain to people that it's really easy to vote. And, you know, as much as to answer any questions about the politics, sometimes literally the only thing you need to do for somebody to get them to vote is to explain that you can just turn up, give your name, you'll be given a piece of paper, it's got the candidates and the parties, and you put a cross in the box. And sometimes people knowing is as simple as that is the difference between them voting and not voting. And Hannah's absolutely right there. It's sad, isn't it? Because in a world where probably the four of us are like geek central about politics, like a little bit more knowledge offered to like a broader community could help people be much more interested.
Finally, before we wrap up, Darren, I wanted to ask, as you said, like when you first hear about this kind of thing and it's, you know, as a crackdown on voter fraud, it doesn't sound particularly egregious. And it's only actually when you look at the levels of voter fraud versus actually how many people might be turned away from polling stations that might be the problem. But is this something that other countries do well, or in countries that do have this kind of voter ID, is it still a problem in those countries? And is there anything that we could really do if people did actually care about this issue genuinely?
Well, I think it depends on the political environment in the country in which you're talking about. So there are some countries where voter intimidation is very much an issue. Being able to protect the voter often requires some sort of identification, a mark, or particularly in emerging democracies where it is a new a way of choosing government. But I think in other countries, in the United States, for example, it has certainly been used as a partisan tool by one side against the other, in the same way that the gerrymandering of boundaries has not been in the best interests of neighbourhoods and their representatives. It's been in the interests of parties. And I think it's a dangerous path to go down, because so many of the laws in the UK are based on trust and respect and honesty, and they've worked, and the evidence here in the voter ID example backs that up. So I think that really, rather than looking abroad, the government should be looking closer to home and trusting British voters.
I'd completely forgotten about the constituency boundary changes.
Oh, well, I mean, we could just have a whole other episode of the podcast just on that. will, they keep sort of like waving the boundaries order, you know, like whenever there looks like a rebellion or something, they like keep waving it behind the speaker's chair. Not literally, listeners, that was a metaphorical waving. It keeps raising its head. And you know, it is an interesting one, actually, that the current government's proposal is to reduce the number of members of parliament to 600. Now, this sounds like special pleading from a member of parliament, but
save our jobs.
But a member of my constituency, a wonderful human named Mike Sleeth, actually looked back in history at how many constituents MPs had represented over time in Britain. And you won't be surprised to know that we now represent more constituents than we've ever represented before, because the number of MPs has remained fairly constant and the population hasn't. And you have to see this all of a part. It's like, why would you want, I mean, you know, I'm not particularly arguing that we should raise the number of members of parliament, but why would you want to reduce it by 50? It seems only that you might want to do that to try and make people who live in densely populated areas have less effective members of parliament. And again, not to be, as Henna said, a conspiracy theorist about these things, but what do we think that's about, folks? Hmm.
Still, at least the Tories now seem on board with House of Lords reform. That's exciting.
Who knew?
And the Daily Mail. I almost felt sorry for Nick Clegg. He must have been wondering where they were 6 years ago. When he tried to listen.
Don't feel sorry for Nick Clegg.
Anyway, Darren, thank you so much for joining us today to chat about that. That's really great. And next, we'll have the political pub quiz question.
Every week, we ask a political pub quiz question that is then answered for you on Friday's show.
This week, my question is slightly specific, but it did do the rounds on Twitter earlier this week, so I'm hoping that people might have picked it up on there. Because Piers Morgan obviously interviewed US President Donald Trump this week, and in the press release sent out from Good Morning Britain about the interview, how many of the 30 quotes included in that press release were from Piers Morgan?
I wonder. Send your answers to office@progressonline.org.uk or tweet us @progressonline and you could win a much coveted Progress mug.
We're going to wrap up now, but we've been delighted to have Darren Hughes joining us today. Do send in your questions and comments through Twitter, email, or best of all, as an iTunes review, and we'll respond to them on Friday's show with a best iTunes comment winning a prize. And please don't forget to subscribe and rate. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music was When in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons. And many thanks to the brilliant Caroline Crampton, who produced this podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.